There is a content warning for this episode as it discusses eating disorders. Please consider this before you continue to listen. Welcome to Inspirational Tales. When my guests on this podcast experience the most challenging times of their lives, they use these hardships to learn, grow, and better themselves. And as a result, they are now thriving in life. Their stories are ones of resilience, strength, and overcoming adversity. So sit back and join me as we celebrate them turning their challenges into triumphs. My guest today is Shreen Almasri. Shreen is a non-diet, body-inclusive and health-at-every-size personal trainer, certified intuitive eating counsellor, and the owner of BU Be Free, a non-diet, body-inclusive fitness and wellbeing community based in Sydney, Australia. Shreen struggled with dieting and body image from a young age, but it wasn't until she migrated to Australia from the UK back in 2010 that her physical and mental health deteriorated, and she developed depression, anxiety, and an eating disorder. Shreen's turning point came when her counsellor warned her that she would hospitalise her under the Mental Health Act. This pushed her into recovery, where she discovered intuitive eating, health at every size, and the non-diet community and became educated in all areas. The combination of all these elements ultimately led her to a full recovery. The experience was life-changing, and this is what inspired her to set up BU Be Free. Shreen is passionate about changing the narrative that diet culture has ingrained in many women. She helps women break free from dieting and heal their relationship with food, exercise, and their body so they can have fun with movement, find food freedom, and body peace through a supportive, non-judgmental, and compassionate community. Now an upcoming author, BU Be Free will be published by Simon & Schuster in early 2022. Hi Shreen, thanks so much for joining me. How are you today?
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Jess. How are you going?
I'm good, thank you. So you were born in the UK. Can you take us back to your childhood in the UK and tell us a bit about what it was like back then for you?
I guess I had a pretty interesting childhood. My mum's been married a couple of times, so my brothers and sisters, we've all got different dads, but we all kind of grew up in the same house, so we're very, very close. My biological dad actually left us homeless when I was 6 years old, and bankrupt. So, that was quite a big change because I was, born into quite a, privileged family. We had a little bit of money and then went from having money to having no money and being put into like council housing when I was about 6 or 7. I mean, other than that, I had a pretty happy childhood in terms of with my family, really close to my siblings, even though we're all over, spread over the world now. Like one of my brothers lives in America and two of them are in in England and then me here. But yeah, lots of happy memories.
Do you want to share any of those? Is there anything that comes to mind that sticks in your memory?
One of my favourite memories is dancing around the living room to the jukebox with my mum and my brothers when I was little, and something I still do today. I'm always dancing around the, lounge room now. Living rooms, I think, more English. Lounge room with, especially with my little, I've got a little boy who's 2 years old, so we do lots of dancing.
Sounds like fun. Do you remember when you started to have body image thoughts or thinking about food in certain ways? How old were you, do you think, when those sort of things started to happen for you?
My first memory was when I was 7 years old and we were doing Aladdin at school, at primary school, and a teacher had asked me if you had a genie in a lamp, what would you wish for? And I'd wish to be skinny. At 7 years old, I already had that message that I had to be thin to be like successful in the world. I guess that was what I'd internalized. But it wasn't until I was 13 years old that I went on my first diet and I went to see the movie There's Something About Mary with Cameron Diaz. I came out of that movie and I was just, she was like my, 7-year-old genie dream. She was like, beautiful. She was popular. She had everything in the film that I thought that, I needed to look like Cameron Diaz to have. So I ran straight to the chemist and I bought Slim Fast shakes, which I guess was the diet that was popular at the time that I'd seen on TV. And that's when the war of my body began. And I went on diet after diet after diet from then. And it was just after my 24th birthday that I went on the diet that led me to an eating disorder. And that was when I moved here to Australia. It kind of coincided with the move. and I was nearly hospitalized. This is when I was 27 years old, and the counselor told me that she was going to section me under the Mental Health Act. And I was like, you can't do that. I'm from the UK. I'm 27 years old. And she's like, yes, I can. I can section you, and I will. And that was kind of my turning point. And I was like, I had to get better. So I just threw myself into recovery and learned everything that I could, did everything that my counselor had recommended as well, of just threw myself into books and education. And that's when I came across the whole like non-diet community and health every size and intuitive eating. And then when I got better, I just wanted to help other people who have struggled with body image and dieting their whole lives. So I had a complete career change. I used to work in the music industry. And well, I still did some part-time work before, but I worked in the music industry for like 15 years before I did this work. And then I decided to go back to uni, and then I trained as a body inclusive personal trainer, and I set up BUB Free, which is a body inclusive wellbeing community here in Sydney.
I didn't realise that you changed careers so drastically like that.
Yeah.
So at 13, you went on that diet. How did you get the money to buy those shakes at 13?
Oh, I had a paper round.
And once you started those shakes, what happened then?
Well, pretty much like every single diet I went on after that, they didn't last. I went on them for a while, would lose a bit of weight, and then would end up just, you know, eating all the foods and then gaining the weight back. And I found that every single diet that I went on, I was just, you know, I was just weight cycling all the time, as you know, is one of the main side effects of dieting, is to, I guess it's more commonly known as yo-yo dieting. But I was just gain weight, lose weight, gain weight, lose weight. And it was just the diet that I went on that led me to an eating disorder was one that I found, which was like the first time I'd done it, was a calorie counting. It was kind of like, it wasn't like MyFitnessPal wasn't around then, but it was kind of similar. And I thought at the time, I was like, wow, you know, I finally found the diet that worked after all this time. But just like the others, I gained the weight back. And for this time, it led me to an eating disorder because I just was exercising like to exhaustion and restricting my food more and more to try and maintain that weight loss. Whereas before, I would have just like given up, but this one just went next level.
So was this when you moved to Australia, you said?
Yeah, this was when I moved to Australia.
Why did you move to Australia?
Oh, well, you came backpacking here when I've been with my partner, Josh, I should just say, for 21 years. So it's a really long time. So I met him when I was 15. And we came backpacking to Australia when I was 18. And we just fell in love with it. And we were just like, we just said one day, oh, I want to live here. And he was like, yeah, me too. And so, yeah, he's a plumber by trade. So after about, I guess, I can't think how many years. So I was 18 and we moved here when I was 25. So, yeah, we did our thing in the UK. I worked in the music industry in London for a little while and he did his plumbing. And then we applied for our visas and moved here and, yeah, absolutely love it.
So was there something that triggered that diet, so the calorie counting, was there anything that triggered you to do that, or was it just a matter of what you were doing hadn't been working?
I was actually weight shamed twice. I was a bridesmaid just before I left, and I was getting measured in the changing room, and the lady was like, oh, we don't stock your size, and really shamed me. And the second time was an Australian doctor for my visa told me that if I didn't lose weight that I wouldn't get my permanent resident visa.
What?
Because my BMI was, I'm just going to put, you know, air quotes, obese on the scale. So he said, yeah.
So obese people aren't allowed to get a visa. Is that what you're saying?
That's what he was saying, that I could fail the medical part of it because, yeah, it was. So that was the reason that I then was like, well, I have to really lose the weight. That's what I thought at the time, that I might not get in. And being weight shamed those two times just, yeah, drove me to that diet, which eventually led me to an eating disorder.
Did you sign up to a gym and go to a gym and have a personal trainer and all of that, or were you doing it on your own?
I was doing it on my own, and I was just doing lots of like crazy runs and things and going to the gym and doing a lot of excessive exercise. And I think as well, where I first moved to in Sydney in the eastern suburbs, it's quite normalised. There's a lot of kind of diet culture and a lot of like that amount of exercise and kind of eating and stuff was very kind of, and still is very kind of prominent there. So I'm not saying obviously that's the reason as well, but it was quite easy to fall into that pattern there when you're surrounded by it as well.
So apart from that counsellor that told you she might section you, did anyone else bring up that this may be becoming an issue for you, or were you hiding it from people, or was it just because everyone around you was doing it as well?
Nobody really brought it up, but when I went and got help, everyone was like, oh, we knew, but they just didn't really know what to say. When my family, is just my partner's parents, we met them in Mexico and they hadn't seen me for a couple of years, and my mother-in-law, she started crying because I was so unwell. I don't think they didn't realise, because we were so far. The reason I went and got counselling is because it was our 10-year anniversary, or 11-year actually, and I just spent the whole weekend in the toilet, basically just purging. So I just knew that was my, I was like, I have to get help. And that's when I went and sought counselling. But then the counselling definitely played a huge role, but I almost went backwards first before I got better. And I know that's quite common in recovery. You kind of have to go like 20 steps back to go, you know, 30, 40 steps forward.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think it's just you kind of hit that rock bottom, and then usually from rock bottom that can be the trigger to get you going. And I think, that's just what happened with me. The counselling obviously, of course, was helping, but I think just that whole, the threat of hospitalisation, and that was it. It already, you know, your eating disorders take so, so much, and it was already taking so, so much from me that I thought it's just, that was going to just be the end of it. If I was going to get hospitalised, it was just going to take everything.
When you say it takes so much, you're talking physically and emotionally. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, physically and emotionally. I mean, it was just the worst thing I've, you know, ever been through. And it's really hard because I think there's a lot of stigma around eating disorders. Not stigma, I guess misunderstanding that it's a serious mental illness as well. And I guess that part's not really talked about a lot. And that's something that I myself didn't know. I remember when they diagnosed me with an eating disorder, I was like, oh no, I don't have an eating disorder. I'm not like, you know, the women in the magazines or something silly I said, when it's like, no, you do have an eating disorder. So, yeah.
The counsellor told you this. So you said that triggered you to get help or to change something. What did you do first?
I started doing the things, but actually the actions that she wanted me to take properly, like cutting down exercise sessions and eating more. And then I just started reading books on recovery. I read one which really helped me, called, is it Life with Ed or Life Without Ed? You might want to double check the title, which was really, really helpful. And then I came across the Health at Every Size book by Lindo Bacon and Intuitive Eating. I discovered Intuitive Eating's by Evelyn Trivioli and Elise Resch, and the Christy Harrison podcast, Food Psych, which was just amazing. And it was just like listening to my stories and what I was going through word from word, but also finding an actual way out, knowing that there was another way, because all I had ever known was, or been taught, was that health was about losing weight. And it's not, it's so much more complicated than that. And I had no idea about the side effects of dieting and what it can do, because, you know, that again, that's not something that's talked about. You know, it has a 90-95% failure rate, and it can lead to so many poor health outcomes, like, you know, weight cycling, which we talked about, disordered eating disorders, you know, psychological well-being. It can really affect your hunger fullness, like social isolation. There's like so many other things as well. And I had no idea, because all I was ever told was lose weight, diet, you know, diet, exercise, you know, that's the answer. And it's not the answer.
Can you explain to us what these actually are?
Yeah, of course. Intuitive eating was developed by two dietitians in America in the 90s, and they were in clinic, and they thought they had a kind of non-diet approach at the time, because the way they were helping their clients was not really being too prescriptive with their food, but the goal was always intentional weight loss. And what they saw was that after some time, these clients were coming back to them and they were really feeling really ashamed because they were gaining the weight back. And they're like, I've been doing everything that you've said and the weight's still coming back. And they kept seeing this time and time again. They're like, something's not right here. So they started doing their own research and they came across the non-diet approach and they developed the intuitive eating framework, which is a set of 10 principles. Like, it's a non-diet approach to help you get back in touch with your hunger fullness signals. So we're all born as intuitive eaters. You know, when we were children, we'd eat when we're full and we stop when we're, sorry, we eat when we're hungry and we stop when we're full. And you lose that as you grow up. Lots of mixed messages, you know, that can be from family, from, you know, diets and things as well. And it intuitive eating teaches you to get back in touch with those hunger fullness signals. And it's about eating in a way that works for your body, that's pleasurable, satisfying. And it's really about having food freedom.
How hard is it to do that in this day and age when we've got so much processed food? You know, there's companies that their food's engineered to make us want to eat more and more and more. And you've obviously got the whole diet culture and the fitness industry that shows a particular thing. And then there's all the photoshopping and filters and everything. How hard is it to get back to that these days?
The first thing, I guess, the intuitive eating, you learn that all foods are like neutral, like even, you know, like processed foods and everything, all foods have nutrients. So it's about really changing your mindset around all these things, like you say, all these beliefs that you have, and the unlearning takes a lot of time. It does take time, but it is possible to heal your relationship to food and have that food freedom. And once you kind of start learning these messages and looking into where they actually come from, it, you know, a lot of it is just made up or not true, then you start realizing, okay, you know, yeah, this is all this stuff that I thought I was doing, or I thought I was doing in the name of health is just incorrect. Was, you know, what is healthy is having, you know, a variety of all different foods and having a really healthy mindset and healthy relationship with food. Because when you have things like food rules and thinking certain foods are, you know, bad, that leads to a lot of feelings of shame and guilt and things like overeating and binging and things as well. Whereas where you have food freedom and you see all foods neutrally and you eat them in tune with your body, there's been actually over 125 studies on intuitive eating, and they show that the intuitive eaters have a much greater nutrient intake than dieters, because dieters tend to stick to kind of like the same foods day in and day out, where intuitive eaters, you know, eat a greater variety of food. They have much more positive relationships with food. They have better quality of life, psychological well-being, self-esteem, body image, all those things. So it's and just all these rules and everything that we've been, you know, taught over the years, I mean, they are kind of ingrained in you and they take time. And even when you're doing the unlearning, there's still, you know, your friends and your family and everyone around you, but you just get better at kind of recognizing it and knowing how to deal with it and in your own way.
So you read these books, you started developing these more healthy ideas, I guess you'd call it. What did your family and friends think? So you've started changing things to help yourself, but what was the response that you got from the people around you?
Really, really positive. I think because I was so much happier and I was going out for dinners again, I would eat dessert with them. I would stop, you know, because before I would just avoid all social events. I didn't go out for meals. I was, you know, exercising excessively, so missing out a lot of stuff. So I think my best friend Mary actually said to me, "The sparkle is back in your eyes."
Oh, that's great.
And that really, really made me cry because, yeah, that's something I guess was lost. Like dieting just, you know, took so much from me, and, you know, intuitive eating gave me so much more and health at every size. So everyone was really pleased and happy for me. And then they've learned a lot of stuff as well along the way too.
Help them as well.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you, do you think, from reading the books and starting this journey to actually getting to where you feel like you were recovering?
A good few years. I mean, I guess I fell through what they like to call kind of wellness trap, kind of clean eating, kind of diets on the way. So I kind of read these books and then I started getting better and I was eating more and having a lot more freedom around food, but I still had, you know, I was still getting a lot of that diet culture and still having those kind of rules around things like sugar and organic. So it took me a long time to kind of, like you say, it takes a long time to unlearn this stuff. And I'm still learning every single day as well. But to be in terms of like being a full intuitive eater, I guess it took me a good few years. I mean, I started recovery from my eating disorder at 27. I'm nearly 37. So that's a long time.
And in terms of exercise, what did you do with that? So you said you were excessively exercising.
Yep. So the thing that actually really changed my relationship with exercise was I was diagnosed with hyperthermic amenorrhea. My period stopped. So I didn't realize I thought I was completely recovered from my eating disorder. So I was maybe 32 years old and I came off the contraceptive pill. We decided like I was ready for a baby. Finally, after all those years, I wasn't ready because I was so scared at the time of weight gain. And then I came off the pill and my periods didn't come. Got to like 6 months and still nothing. And then I found the doctors weren't very helpful at all, actually. They kept telling me to go back on the pill. And it wasn't until I came across a book called No Period Now What by Dr. Nicola Rinaldi. And I read that and I was like, oh, I think I've got this. And then to recover from that, you have to stop all high intensity exercise and also gain weight until your body feels safe enough to have a baby, because that's basically why you stop your periods stop, because your body's like, well, I can't, you know, get pregnant, because dieting is like starvation for the body. Like our body doesn't know the difference. When we're dieting, it doesn't know we're dieting. It just thinks we're starving ourselves. So it's a survival mechanism. It doesn't say it happens to everybody. Like everyone's bodies are different. And there are some people that can do high intensity classes and do lots of exercise and not lose their periods or have problems. But me in particular, my body was very sensitive. So I had to give up all high intensity exercise for 2 years. And I just did walking pretty much and some light weights until I still actually didn't recover my period. My appendix burst halfway through and I nearly died, which is it's another story. And that kind of pushed my body was under so much stress from that and the recovery, it kind of pushed you back to the start. So I ended up having fertility treatment for my son, but I did get pregnant first go, which meant that even though I wasn't getting my periods, my body was ready to have a baby. Yeah, so that really healed my relationship with exercise and just learning again about all these things that you've been taught from diet culture, you know, like messages like no pain, no gain, and no rest days and exercise 6 days a week. And when I actually looked into it and it's like, you only really need to do 10 minutes a day and the exercise can be anything you want it to be. It doesn't have to be structured, timed or measured. It can be, you know, dancing around the lounge room. It can be cleaning even. It can be, I love hula hooping. It can be anything you want it to be. And I think just learning all of that and finding movement that I actually enjoyed, because I would force myself to do these classes and this exercise, and also exercising from that mindset of only to earn or burn food is a really, really negative place. But now I move my body from a place of self-care and a place of joy, and from like my mental health and my intention behind it is completely different. And I think that played a big part in it too.
How much were you exercising?
I was exercising pretty much every day. I just give you an example. There was times where I was running half marathons before I went to work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Were you extremely exhausted as well?
Really exhausted. And I had a lot of injuries. I injured my plantar fasciitis from exercise, to the fact that the foot doctor said that it's the worst case that she'd ever seen. So really, I didn't sleep. My hair fell out. I'm very lucky that I don't really get spots or anything, but I got like acne all across the bottom of my chin that I went to kept seeing people and they kept saying, no, it's just hormones, which as soon as I actually started eating properly and the exercise, these things all disappeared. So there was lots of stuff.
Even with this, though, you'd still push yourself to exercise more at that time? Is that what you were doing?
Well, yeah, even after I cut down my exercise massively when I was in, thought I was recovered in an eating disorder, but I was still exercising 6 days a week, but not to anywhere near the extremes that I used to do. But I thought that was kind of normal still. But it, for me, it might be for some people, but for me, it was too much exercise for my body. And even now I can't run or anything. I went for a bike ride with Josh and Bryn, and there was a massive hill. And I went up this hill, which is the most cardio I've done in ages, and my period ended up being like 8 days late that from that one bike ride. So I just don't do any. I just do walking and weights still now. I mean, not everybody has that, but my body's still quite sensitive even after all this time.
And you listen to your body now and do what it needs.
Yeah, I listen to my body and completely different relationship with exercise. I have such a nourishing relationship with it now, and I really enjoy it. And I just do it when I really tune in and, to my body and ask myself those questions, how am I feeling today? How does my body feel? And if I don't feel like doing it, then I don't do it. And if I do feel like doing it, I do. And even if I'm halfway through the workout and I'm really not feeling it, my body's tired, I will just listen and rest if I need to, and just having fun with it.
So how far along into this did you decide to actually train to be a personal trainer yourself?
So I was already trained to be a personal trainer when I was diagnosed with hyperphagic amenorrhea, becoming a more like body inclusive personal trainer sort of as I went through that recovery and learned a lot more about the myths around exercise as well.
This was how long after the counsellor session?
I qualified as a personal trainer, I think, 2015, 6 years ago. So yeah, that's 4 years after.
And what made you decide to do that? Going from the music industry to the personal trainer, obviously very different.
Yeah, I just wanted to help women who were struggling with that body image and dieting, and just create a really safe and supportive and compassionate environment for them. Because a lot of traditional gym environments can be I don't want to say the wrong word, because some of them do come from good intentions, but they can feel quite triggered in those environments because there's a lot of like pictures of really like thin, lean people, and they're being sold like diets and weight loss plans all the time, or they go there and they're getting shamed and, we need to burn off our, Christmas dinners and things like that. And I just felt really uncomfortable. And a lot of women who work with me are all in all different shapes and sizes, whereas, gyms can not be very inclusive of all body types. And yeah, it can be quite intimidating and a really unsafe space as well.
So your clients, how do they actually find you as a personal trainer? Because I'd imagine that a lot of people would go, okay, I want to get healthy and fit. I'll sign up to my local gym and join with a personal trainer at the gym. Obviously, they're not going to find you there. How do your clients find you?
Oh, through like Instagram mostly, and Facebook. I would post in local Facebook groups and I'd explain that it's a non-diet approach that we have. We have like no talk of like body stuff, food, no kind of shaming. Classes are very supportive and compassionate, and kind of explain what our approach is. And a lot of the people who come to me have either had really bad experiences in gyms, or they don't feel comfortable and they just want to, just feel supported. And they don't realize that there is another approach to movement. They most people just sign up at the gym and do that, where they're like, oh, wow, this is different. This sounds like something that I want, would like to try.
So what does training with you look like? What do your programs look like?
It's very, very fun. We do a lot of dancing. We have hula hoops. We play charades. We do a lot of games, a lot of song workouts. We have some traditional stuff in there, of course, but I always mix it up. So we do like a card game where you write down an exercise for each of the suits of the card. It'd be like push-ups and squats, and you grab a card and you'll do like 5 reps of that exercise. And or we play things like Uno, and I make a game out of that with exercise. So I just make it as fun as possible. Lots of laughing. Yeah, definitely. And you'll always see us hula hooping. That's our favorite.
It's your favorite, is it?
Yeah.
So everyone has to do it.
But it's just really to show that there's a way that you can have fun. It's almost like just getting back it's a movement like you did when you were a child, you know, and you just had really just had fun with it.
So enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
As opposed to pushing yourself and punishing yourself to do exercise.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, you're in Sydney, so you're in lockdown, unfortunately. Can people still work with you in lockdown?
They can work. I have an online program that there is that option available, which is there on my website, bebefree.com.au, or you can find it on Instagram. I'm Shireen_bebefree. You can download a free week as well of the program if you want to sort of get a feel for what it's about. But the program is more... it's about helping you find food freedom, fun, exercise and body peace. So it's like all three things.
I will put those details in the show notes as well if anyone wants to have a look and check it out. Have you received any backlash from the traditional fitness industry for doing this approach?
Yes. Yeah. I get a lot of you're promoting, you know, I hate saying this word, obesity, and a lot of backlash, but I like the fight, so... And a lot of the time I think people just aren't aware, they're not, because we're not taught about, like, even becoming a personal trainer, which took me a little while to actually get my approach completely to the way that it is now, because the things that you're taught are very much in line with diet culture and that messaging. And you know, I didn't have any clue before of the side effects of dieting and what health actually is, things like weight stigma as well, weight cycling. And I think you don't know what you don't know, but I think when they come in with that kind of like, I'm just gonna like criticize rather than, oh, actually this sounds interesting, I'd like to learn more. And that's how I always just think, oh, hopefully, you know, even if it is a negative person, that they, it might have planted the seed for them to kind of look into it and learn about it.
So you didn't learn about any of that in your course?
Nothing. No, there's nothing even then on eating disorders or anything. I don't remember seeing anything like that.
So you had to go on and do further training to learn all of this?
Yeah, everything I pretty much have been learning is from the non-diet community and the books, and I did some courses as well with some really amazing non-diet professionals here that you might know, like Louise Adams and Fiona Willer. I've done some professional courses through them. But the actual, like, fitness stuff, I pretty much learned and just created myself. And there's another lady here called Anna who owns Haven Wellness, and we kind of started this process together and both grew our sort of body inclusive fitness spaces, so we've been learning a lot together and we're still learning all the time. And
that's good that you're working together too, not competing against each other.
Oh no, we work together. We're actually going to be launching a fitness course for professionals to learn how to be body inclusive fitness professionals as well, because there's a lot of fitness professionals that would like to learn this approach. And so yeah, that's exciting, because that's something that I definitely wish that we had had when we first started, where we just sort of learned as we went along.
Now, with your recovery, is this something that is ongoing, or is it that you can actually completely recover and then move on, or is it something that you need to kind of keep working on for the rest of your life?
I don't think you ever fully recover. And even if it's not even necessarily eating disorders, even if you've done a lot of dieting and stuff in the past, you're always going to get triggered. You're always going to have bad body image days. That's completely normal and all part of the process. But what changes is how you deal with them. Like in the past, you know, if I got triggered to diet, I would have just gone on a diet. Whereas now I'm able to recognize those thoughts and be able to process them and go, no, there's no way I'd go back to that, and then just kind of move on. And then and then that's it, that the thought will come and then it will go. So that's, I guess that's what changes. But in terms of when you heal your, you know, relationship to food and especially with your body image, it doesn't mean that you don't still struggle with those things. And I think, you know, that can also be a bit of a misconception that people think, oh, you heal your body image and you don't have any hang-ups anymore, which isn't true. It's just how you deal with them and how you choose, learn to choose kindness rather than punishment, which I think is the biggest one for me. I always, every decision I make around my body or is always like, you know, am I being kind to my body? Whereas, you know, going on a diet isn't being kind to my body, and forcing myself to exercise when I don't want to isn't being kind. That's how I really approach everything.
Is that the same with other people's response to you as well? Like, because you said there were those two times when you were body shamed and they triggered you to go into the diets that ended up becoming eating disorders.
Mm.
How do you now respond if someone does say something to you?
If somebody said something to me, I would be educating them on, you know, dieting and the actual side effects, what it can do, explaining what health actually is, you know, recommending books. And, you know, you don't have to be, I don't even get weighed now by health professionals. I just refuse if anyone asks me to be weighed. I know that some people who are in larger bodies might struggle with that a little bit more. Being in a smaller body myself, it's, if I say I don't want to be weighed, it's, they just say, oh, okay. Whereas somebody in a larger body might not get that reaction. So it can be a lot more difficult to put those boundaries in and stand up for yourself. Yeah, I would just educate and say, have you read this, and write a letter. And, but I mean, fortunately I haven't come across it. I mean, when I was pregnant, they tried to weigh me and I refused. I also had gestational diabetes, which again, they were trying to weigh me all the time and want me to keep food logs and everything, which I didn't do because of my history. And I know how to approach my food and everything now from a kind of self-care mindset. Yeah, luckily I haven't been in that situation, but previously it was those situations that triggered me to diet. And unfortunately, you know, healthcare settings are one of the worst for weight stigma and shaming people, and they're causing more harm when they're doing this than, you know, like I say, a lot of people don't realize because they mostly have good intentions.
So you've obviously learned a lot about dieting and exercise and all of that, but what have you learned about yourself in this process?
I guess that I've learned that I'm a very, very strong person, can pretty much handle anything that comes my way. I've learned to be kind to myself and to know that I don't always have the answers and that I still have lots of learning to do as well.
Now, you have just finished writing your own book.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about your book and when it's going to come out?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I've got my first book coming out next year in March, and it's going to be a 12-step guide that will help you cultivate a real peaceful, joyful, and positive relationship with yourself, food, exercise, and your body, and to help you create your own well-being on your terms. It's not really a book about fixing yourself. It's a book about becoming your true self, the person that you were meant to be before the world and diet culture told you who you had to be.
Is this a combination of everything that you've learned along the way?
Yeah, it's everything that I've learned along the way and that I did with myself for my own full recovery and the people that I've worked with as well. So it's really exciting. There's a lot of good practical things in there.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I also break down everything in a lot more detail about the truth about dieting and some common health myths and things about like the history of the BMI and everything as well.
So I have one final question that I ask everyone at the end of their interview. If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
Don't go on a diet.
Well, thank you so much, Shereen, for joining me today. It's been fantastic to talk to you. And we'll keep an eye out for your book, and I'm sure I'll learn a lot more.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
If after listening to this episode you need support or help, please contact the Butterfly Foundation on 1-800-333-4673 or Lifeline on 131114. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspirational Tales. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could please share it with your family and friends so that we can inspire more people. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review, and make sure that you have subscribed or followed the podcast on whichever platform that you are listening to it on so that you can stay up to date as new episodes are released. Thanks again, and I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Inspirational Tales.